since they want to know.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m. Opening day for Major League Baseball, one of my favorite days. This is my March Madness, even though it's April 1st. We're going to talk baseball. We're also going to talk programming change coming here to KOAL. When I came here 11 years ago, something was obvious to me immediately. Rush Limbaugh rules the roost. And of course, if you listen to KOAL enough, you know that the listeners absolutely love Rush Limbaugh. We hear this all the time. However, it is the end of an era for Rush Limbaugh on KOAL. And starting on Monday, we will have a new program. It's called Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. And Jimmy is actually joining us right now. We're going to get familiar and acquainted with him. Jimmy, it's a pleasure to get you on the show today. I definitely appreciate you making out the time for us.
Jordan, happy opening day. I'm a baseball guy myself.
It's the best day of the year, right?
Yeah, no, it's a big deal for me. And I will have you know, my Yankees. I grew up in a Yankee house, and don't hate me for that, Utah listeners, because baseball, very much like religion, your parents kind of pick it for you, you know, and then you show up from there. But my Yankees, I will have you know, Jordan, did a very good thing. They used the stadium as a vaccination site during the coronavirus pandemic, which I think was out of necessity because they needed to get rid of all those needles that were left behind from A-Rod and Jason Giambi.
That's a great point. You're 100% right. When it comes to baseball teams, you don't get a pick, right? I'm a Dodger guy, been a Dodger guy my entire life. I didn't get a pick that. Coming out of the womb, I was a Dodger fan because my dad said so, damn it.
Yeah, so true. It's like, did you want dessert, yes or no? I was like, yes. Okay, well then Don Mattingly's a great first baseman. That was my youth. That's what I grew up around. Big baseball family. Levittown, New York, which is really like America's first suburb. It was built for American troops returning home from World War II. They bought houses using the GI Bill. They built above-ground pools. They drank a lot of Meisterbrau, which is weird because they were very patriotic guys. But it was just a wonderful place to grow up because it was like unapologetically pro-America. And that's very much the vibe of my show. If you've heard enough of it, it's that I'm kind of not taking the culture war serious, but I am taking kind of the country serious because I care about it. You get it?
Absolutely, and I've had the opportunity to listen now over the last couple of weeks. And so, Jimmy, I want to talk about your career and how you got started in radio. I mean, you've been around for a long time, and on top of everything else, you have an interesting career path. Cab driver to comedian to host of Fox Across America. So, I mean, all in all, man, you've been well-traveled over the last, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, man, it's been a ride. I started out driving a taxi in New York City. I don't mean to brag, ladies. I know that gets a lot of yous worked up. You're like, is this guy single? No, I kid. But I started out driving a taxi 12 to 15 hours a day in the city and writing stand-up comedy and performing here on the stages in New York and around the country. And then I became the head writer for a TV show called Gotham Comedy Live on Access TV. And I would basically write the celebrity monologue every week for maybe like a William Shatner or David Hasselhoff or a Pamela Anderson, somebody who wasn't a comedian, they would task me with turning them into a comic in like 1 week. And that ultimately got me seen by Fox people who brought me into Fox News to be on TV as like an analyst. And then I wrote for the Kennedy Show on Fox Business. And then one day somebody let me fill in on the radio and they were like, wow, this guy's kind of all right at this. And I don't know. I think what makes it work for me, Jordan, is that I'm very much more of a listener than a host in that I've spent most of my life driving a taxi and listening to radio. So I kind of come from a listener's point of view when it comes to issues, and that's how I wound up on the phone with you. I mean, the fact that you're telling me you've heard my show and you're still being friends with me means a lot, man.
Well, when you talk about being a cab driver and how this kind of played a role in what makes you so good as being a listener on the radio, I've got to assume, being a taxi driver in New York City, man, you've seen and heard some stuff, man.
Jordan, I'll tell you a quick story. I had a woman get in my cab once with a sock puppet on each hand and communicate me with like a 45-minute drive. She only spoke to me through puppets. So they wanted to go to Cadman Plaza in Brooklyn, which is just no man's land. It's nowhere you need to be. But they had gotten in, and one puppet was like, we're going to Cadman Plaza, and the other puppet was like, take the Manhattan Bridge. And then they fought with me over my driving and my directions for like 45 minutes. And the craziest part of the whole thing is, like, when we got there, the woman working the puppets actually looked at me through the partition, and she goes, you need help. And she got out of my cab and slammed the door. It was, like, bizarre. And we're married 15 years now. I kid.
How did you deal with that kind of stuff? How are you sane today?
Well, I don't. That's an arguable, debatable point. I think what happens is when you drive in a cab, it's so unpredictable and there's so much beyond your control that you really learn to calm down to the point that it's almost like an unhealthy level of calm where you're almost dead on the inside, because you need to develop an immunity to traffic and you need to develop an immunity to like people screaming at you. So what happens, Jordan, is like in the beginning, you're very friendly to the passengers and you learn to kind of engage anybody and become their pal as like a survival mechanism, because you don't want them to kill you if something goes wrong. And then if you're driving like 4 or 5 years, you're actually hoping somebody will kill you, so your demeanor changes a little bit because it's too much traffic. But I would basically just tell you that the survival skill of cab driving is very much the survival skill of politics in the year 2021. You can take the issues seriously, but you can't take yourself seriously. Like, you have to downshift and just kind of be cool. Because looking out at the world, what do we need right now? You know, is I obviously lean pretty far to the right. I'm unapologetically pro-American, come from a big law enforcement military background. But we just need more cool people. Like, more than anything else out there, so many people aren't being cool right now. That if you could just be cool, just be easy to get along with, you'd make progress in the country.
In fact, today, I'm listening to you and you made the point, I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, just don't be a jerk.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole manifesto of the show. It's like, we lean to the right, yes, but if you can just be cool, we could get back to a place where, I mean, you're a sports guy, I'm a sports guy. Like, I think, like, America might have peaked in, like, 1985 when the Bears made the Super Bowl shuffle video, because it was like football had made its way into, like, pop culture, and America was really integrated, and we were, like, really honest about what we were as a country, which was not a perfect place. We were just the best place. And the truth is, that's where we are now. We're not a perfect country. We just happen to be the best country by leaps and bounds. But rather than celebrating that, we have a Democratic Party, I feel, that very much pushes like this message of victimhood and everybody in America is racist and they don't even know it. And none of that's true. And they're only saying it for political purposes. But I think to cut through that, you have to be cool. Because if you yell back, you're just one of them psychos. And you don't really win anybody over by yelling at them. So our disposition on our show is we're very much putting your vitamins in your applesauce. Like, you don't even realize you're digesting hard news, but man, we have to cover a lot of it.
Again, our guest right now is Jimmy Failla, again, host of Fox Across America. You'll hear this starting Monday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Jimmy, you and I had a conversation before we hopped on the air, and we were talking about Rush Limbaugh. And obviously, you know, we said goodbye to a legend, arguably the greatest radio personality in the history of this business. You're a radio guy, I'm a radio guy. We recognize the greatness of Rush. And you brought up the idea of being complimentary to Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, it's so true, because I'll tell you why. Honestly, this is the only thing I know how to do well. And I listen to so much Rush in my cab. Is radio, at its best, allows the people listening to it to get a real bounce in their day, because you listen to it at work, you listen to it during your commute, and it kind of gives you something to look forward to. It gives you a 2 or 3 hour, you know, escape from the job you might be doing, the commute you might be on. And the thing Rush did for me as a guy that was in a cab 12 to 15 hours a day is obviously was brilliant. Obviously he had incredible analysis, but he was wildly entertaining as like a partner, as like a ride-along partner to your day. And I always say, Jordan, like, radio is like a buddy cop movie. You get in your car one day and you turn the dial and you find out that you have a new partner talking to you through the speakers, and you basically have to decide if he's a partner you can ride along with or not. And Rush was obviously the best partner of all time in the buddy cop movie of radio, but what I've always been mindful of as a broadcaster is that's the best thing you can do for the listeners. Like, if you're cool and you're entertaining, it works. And that's why we do consider this show, and it's, you know, we're picking up a lot of stations because we're a very good complement to Rush, and that obviously we're not as smart or as influential or as talented. I mean, you've heard enough of this interview to know it that. But we're a good hang. And to all of your listeners who I know are going to be crushed about the idea of not having Rush, as I am, I mean, radio's better having him around, you should know that I mean it. I'm very much worth giving a chance because I'm bargaining in good faith, and I'm one of you. I'm not some superstar big-name talent with, like, a huge Twitter following. I'm a guy who started out driving a taxi and is very emblematic of what the American dream is. I mean, I'm replacing pacing radio shows that I was listening to in a taxi. And when you talk about, like, you know, not having money in the bank, I've been at points where I didn't have the bank. You know what I'm saying, Jordan?
Yeah.
You know, in the bank, have you ever, like, where the bank is actually just like a brown bag? Like, I've been there, folks. I'm a real dude. I've seen some things, is what I'm trying to say.
Do you feel the pressure of now knowing that, that 10 to 1 time slot, it's been so vital in radio for so long? Do you feel the pressure of now taking over? I guess we can compare it into sports, right? Like, when someone has to step into the shoes of Kobe Bryant, when LeBron James joined the Lakers, he had to carry that franchise to the next level. There's got to be pressure involved, right?
On some level, yes, but this is the way you get away from it. I mean, you have to make peace with the fact that obviously no one can be Rush Limbaugh. So the pressure, I think, would come from assuming you were going to duplicate what he did in some way, shape, or form, which is just impossible. The thing that made him great, which is the thing that kind of takes the pressure off me, from my own approach, is I know what made him great is he was so uniquely who he was, meaning the Rush on the air was the Rush off the air. Anybody who met him, anybody who knew him, was like, this guy's just awesome. And he was awesome because he was himself. And the only thing I can put pressure on myself to be is just me. Like, if I come on and I just do what I think I do well, then I really, honestly, like, I don't feel pressure in that regard, but I feel pressure in the sense of I want the listeners to know that I get it. Because we have this inclination in this day and age where life is just so convenient that if something doesn't immediately give us what we want, we're like, well, never again. You know, you're not my friend. I'm not talking to you anymore. So I guess the pressure I feel is just to make sure everybody gets where I'm coming from. I miss Rush, too. I feel the way most of you do politically, and I care greatly about the country, and I'm a pretty good hang. Like, Jordan, if you talk to me long enough, you always leave feeling better about your own intelligence. Because you're like, well, I'm smarter than this guy. So it's going to work, man. Just hang in there.
All right, Jimmy, let's talk about the important stuff. Opening day, Major League Baseball. You're a Yankee guy. I did not take the Yankees to go to the World Series. I know we got a lot of Yankee fans here in the state of Utah. Look, the bottom line is, man, I don't trust New York to stay healthy. That's been a problem over the last couple of years, be it Stanton, be it Judge, already Luis Severino on the IL. Give me your thoughts on Major League Baseball this year. And I got to get a World Series prediction out of you. I have to.
Oh, I'll give you one. Okay, here's my thought, for real. I do think the Yankees are uniquely positioned in their division, like you said, if in fact their pitching staff can remain healthy. That's obviously the big if for every one of these franchises, is that we're going back to 162 games. You know, that's going to be, I think, the big challenge is going to be arms and how you fill innings, because we're going to see things like openers, you know, and all kinds of creative bullpen configurations. The Mets are already talking about that over here. And I think, honestly, this is a Yankee team, having been there, you know, lost a couple of ALCSs and, you know, faced off against the Astros and stuff like that, that is uniquely positioned in that I think the shortened season benefited them last year, and I think we will be better, you know, especially at the top of our rotation, having guys get healthy. So if you wanted a real prediction, I keep forgetting that I'm on a sports talk station. What's so funny, Jordan, is whenever I talk sports on my show, I'm mindful of the fact that most people don't know them as well as you do, so I try to stay in generalities. But if you want to get into, like, value over replacement player and stuff, like, I'll talk stats with you and put this crowd to bed right now. But no, I think the Yankees, looking out at what we're doing right now, obviously, I love LeMahieu, I love Aaron Hicks, I love Aaron Judge. Giancarlo Stanton horrifies me because he doesn't remind me of a top-tier slugger. He reminds me of the knockoff version I would buy down in Canal Street here in New York. Like, like a Times Square Rolex, like, it looks good, it comes with a nice pedigree, but then you realize it's not really that dependable. So, I'm not high on him. I love Gleyber Torres, and I think if Gary Sanchez can block a single ball in the dirt this year, it would be progress. But it's, you know, me growing up in a Yankee household, me feeling like we're due because we haven't won since 2009, has me thinking this could be the year. So if you want a reckless World Series prediction, and everybody forgive me for this because it's very much coming from my heart, I think the Yankees will go. I actually believe that in my heart, though. Okay, and I think over on the National League side of town, I like the Padres as my sleeper pick.
Okay. I'm surprised you're not going Subway Series with the Mets. I mean, yesterday with the signing of Lindor, and you take a look at what they have offensively, I'm not a Mets guy, but I'm excited for Jacob DeGrom because finally this guy has some run support. We're going to see DeGrom win more than 9 or 10 games instead of giving us 20 quality starts and 9 wins, right? I mean, he actually has the ability to win 20 games this year.
No, I will give you that, okay? But here's the thing. Lindor getting a $341 million contract, the Mets can't point to one long-term contract like that that actually worked out for them. For whatever reason, they have nobody goes to the Mets and gets better. Like, nobody. There's very few examples you can give me of somebody who actually went there and was a better version than the guy they brought it, that they anticipated getting. Not that Lindor is that kind of player, because he's durable. He's not a, big power guy that's going to break down. I mean, he has good power numbers for his position. But I'm not sold on the Mets, because if you're around them long enough, there's always something. That's the whole thing. Like, there's always something. We've had so many of these optimistic Mets seasons where they start off 10-1, and everybody, thinks it's going to be great. And by, the middle of July, if you get there early, you can play, And that's very much the reality for this Mets team. No, I will look at the – I looked at the Padres' roster this morning. We were having this talk before we did my show. And they're stacked. And they're stacked in a way that – you know how hard it is to repeat now? And, everybody's obviously pretty bullish on the Dodgers because their rotation got better, I think you would argue. But I think the Padres are well-positioned in the shadow of their bigger market cousins to sneak in and take it. I actually really, I like the Padres. That's not my heart. Like, the Yankees is kind of my heart. The Padres, I'd actually bet the Padres. I don't know what the actual price is on them. I don't know if they're like 10-1 or 20-1. I should look at the futures in Vegas so I can throw more money away. Okay, because that lineup, top to bottom, is pretty good. Mateo's really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you going to tell me Fernando Tatis Jr., who, by the way, didn't he get a bazillion dollars too? I feel like he did.
Yeah, I got a little less than Lindor, but the big difference is Tatis hasn't even played 162 games yet.
I know. That's what's crazy. Like, I feel like I can give you three examples of guys that have signed 10-year deals and actually they got a return on the investment. Derek Jeter was one, but again, not a big power hitter, but he had a 10-year, $189 million deal that he signed after the 98 season. And of course, we got a huge return on that. We won a bunch more. I think, at that point forward, we won three more World Series after that, and he was great. He was Derek Jeter. He was the face of the franchise. We had one good 10-year deal out of Sabathia that we extended that kind of went downhill, but he was a big, durable guy. And the only other argument you could make is maybe the 10-year that A-Rod signed, that he technically signed to go to Texas with and wound up on the Yankees with, although it didn't come without controversy. There's not a lot of other 10-year deals you could point to. Like Robinson Cano, who left the Yankees to go to Seattle, I believe it was like $242 million at the time through Roc Nation and Jay-Z. He was a tomato can. He was hurt. I mean, he was Robinson Cano. He didn't run hard. He had good power numbers for a second baseman, but he was a very frustrating guy to watch, and he was rewarded for that effort with a trade back to the Mets, which is, oh, good goodness. Why would you do that to somebody? Aren't there laws against cruel and unusual punishment, Jordan?
There should be. 10-year deals worked out okay for the Dodgers. You sign Mookie Betts to a 12-year, $300 million deal. You get a World Series championship. There you go.
That's nuts. How did they make that? I still don't understand that trade. Alan Dershowitz, who's a famous celebrity attorney, he's been around forever, he grew up a huge Brooklyn Dodger fan, but because he lives up in Martha's Vineyard, kind of adopted the Red Sox as his team in, like, the 70s. And every time he comes on my show, like, we have to sit on the dump button because he starts screaming if I bring up baseball about the Mookie Betts trade. Like to the point that, like, it's not healthy. And he's the only guy in the history of the show I have to use the dump button for, is an attorney who's, probably, I don't know, 78 years old, but people love their baseball, Jordan. That's the point. That's why I was so happy to come do this. God, I love opening day.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It really is. Again, Jimmy Failla joining us right now. You can listen to him Monday right here on KOAL from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Fox Across America. Jimmy, it was so much fun to get to talk with you over the last 20 minutes or so and usher in a new era here on the station. I know you and I will have more conversations, especially with it being baseball season in the near future. Welcome to the KOAL family, and again, thank you so much for the time today.
Dude, this is a big deal, and you better come do my show. I know you're a big sports star, but you better come do Fox Across America.
Anytime. You tell me, I'm there.
Rock and roll, Jordan. I owe you big. Thanks, brother. See everybody Monday.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.